Oh, hi. Thanks for downloading or listening to the podcast, Ed Said, that complements Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut, 10 to noon, Monday through Friday. Oh, it's almost over. Can you feel it? The election cycle is coming to an end just a little bit longer. I don't know what I'm going to talk about when this is all over. I'm sure whoever takes the White House will give me plenty of material. One of the things I do want to talk about with this show is its tone and its mission, only because it came up recently. I try to remain calm and open about everything at all times, but sometimes being human, emotions get the best of me, and sometimes I fall short, and I'm okay with that. I'm a human being. I don't think I'm one of those who rants and raves at anybody who disagrees with me. I try to be factual in my disagreements or accept that sometimes people are going to agree to disagree. And there are other times when sometimes the argument or the discussion is, and I prefer to have discussions over arguments, is going nowhere. And if it's going to go nowhere, I just need to learn to probably shut it down, call it a day, rather than continuing on uphill against impossible forces. If we're just not going to be able to find a common ground or agree to disagree, it's probably best to cut it off. And I'm still learning that. This show is in its infancy. We're not even a year in. This show launched on January 4th of this year. It's new for me. I come from a background of music-based radio, rock radio, doing radio bits. I've been tased on the air. I've fought my intern. I've done all the goofy stuff, and now I'm a little older, a little wiser, and trying something new. And I'm learning as I go. And sometimes discussions get heated. I am not what I see out there that's so popular is someone who yells and screams about one side, that they're the enemy, that they're ruining everything, that this country is going down the toilet, about conspiracies and nonsense. That is not me. I'm a facts and numbers kind of guy, and if you look at things, things are statistically better, and they're getting better. It's not great. There's a lot of changes that could be made, and we need to ask for that to happen. I made the case today about the president doesn't operate in a vacuum, is not king, does not decide everything. As much as we want to change everything, it's not going to change from the top down. It will have to start at the bottom. It starts with our local officials and who we send off to Washington. So if third party is in your blood, get it going on the local level, in the state level, then the national level, then to the White House, because it's just not going to happen. The parties are beholden to themselves, not us. And we need to change that from inside or start our own parties. I'm not talking about a revolution here. I'm just talking about who we're serving rather than them serving us. As was evidenced by the primaries, these political parties operate for themselves and their best interests. Even now, Priebus threatening people who won't get behind Donald Trump. These are things we need to keep in mind. So while we might have quarrels on the air, and I will fall short of my lofty goals, I will not stoop to fear-mongering and hatred, and I won't stand for it either. I've had the displeasure of viewing an Alex Jones clip today in which I don't even know when it was from. It could have been from a year or two ago, but he was on a British show, and he's just yelling, and that's not representative of what we are as Americans, but he's just trying to make a buck. I'm also trying to make a buck, but I want to do it honestly. So I won't sell you bug-out bags or vitamins or water on my website that doesn't exist. I won't trade in on your fears for my monetary gain. Does that make me a rube? Maybe. Does that make me miss out on the opportunity of riches exploiting an audience that's there? Maybe. But I'm not going to do it. I'm okay with that. So while I might fall short when it comes to having civilized discussion all the time, I still think my goals are loftier than some of my contemporaries. And I hope you can appreciate that even when I do get in an argument or two. On today's podcast, I address an email from a listener and we talk finances, what you're doing wrong with your money. Here you go. Enjoy.
I had designs on detailing my wonderful weekend of hanging out at the Big E and eating fried food all weekend. And then I had a plan of what I was going to talk about, which I always do. I've mentioned this before. Every professional broadcaster comes in with a plan. None of them do it off the top of their head. At least an idea of things that you're going to hit. I will touch on Donald Trump's very bad, no good weekend and his defenders' very flimsy grasp on reality. And I will talk about how there is an attempt to pit Sanders followers against Hillary Clinton, the $10 billion tunnel for Hartford, and among other things. But then I got an email after I had set everything up. And I always talk about, I encourage you to email that I will reply via email or reply on the air. It's edsays@talkofconnecticut.com. And this one came in this morning about 9:20. And I will paraphrase the majority of it because it is lengthy, which is not a problem. It's well written, which I enjoy. But this email comes in and says, I'm quite concerned about many issues, Ed, from the economy, national security, and then goes on that they're highly disgusted with their politicians and saying that I had an excellent message a few months ago regarding politics and politicians. Vote third party and show the establishment politicians that things are different. We're sick of being treated like we don't know what we're doing, saying I was impartial. This is referring to me, a firebrand, and mad as hell like us average Americans. Your message of sending them a message got lost, and suddenly you're advocating for Hillary Clinton, the queen of the establishment and one of the worst politicians this country has produced. This isn't about voting third party. This isn't about voting for Trump or Clinton. Sir, you have a voice. You can broadcast it widely to many people. Unlike myself and other Americans who aren't on radio or TV, you can make yourself heard. And it continues talking about the differences between Trump, Clinton, Johnson, and advocating for none of them, calling the three of them bad candidates. And I don't disagree. I'm assuming what I've gleaned from this is the accusation is that I have fallen back on what I was advocating earlier, the third party movement. And I don't believe that's the case. When it was Sanders and Clinton, I wanted Sanders because he was a new face on that level. Not a new face to politics, but I have listed my many grievances with Hillary Clinton, not the least of which is the last name. Mathematically, the odds of you becoming president of the United States are small. Mathematically, the odds of a husband and wife team sharing that title should be infinitesimally small. But here we are. Donald Trump, for all his bumbling and buffoonery, at least represents that kind of change. Somebody from outside of the circle, however abstractly. Just the idea of someone who's not a career politician, who made their success, I'm putting air quotes around that, in business. What he could have been was what people wanted. What he ended up being is what people knew he was. And Johnson has proven to be Johnson. As much as we would like to see it, is he the better candidate? I don't think so. Could he learn those things on the job? Probably. Would you like to have him to have a little more knowledge going in? Absolutely. But if you were to look at resumes and if you were to look at experience, and don't bring up Benghazi, that's been done, that's been beaten into the ground. You can bring up the Clinton Foundation. Again, the AP put out initial reports and then had to say, well, those numbers were off. Everything with Hillary has been accusations. Nothing has stuck. And if you believe that there is this global conspiracy all aligned behind this one person without anybody coming out and speaking against it, or if they do, they end up dead, in this day and age, that is impossible. Between hackers and proxies and hiding identities and leaking things out, she is not all-powerful. She's not omnipotent. And what I have said isn't an endorsement of Hillary Clinton. Again, my issues with her are multiple. Her handling of the email thing, the fact that she had a server, the ease at which she went through handheld devices, the lack of knowledge. But that's my issue with many of our politicians. And for those of you who are a little older, don't take offense. But it seems that their age does seem to be a problem for them when it comes to technology. My father's 76 years old. He is the exception to the rule when it comes to technology, but he's been in the sector the entirety of his career. He can build something from scratch. He knows the ins and outs. He can peel away the software and have it do what he needs it to do. Hillary Clinton spills coffee on her phone and just says, get me another one. There is a difference between understanding security and just using a device. But the emails, in the bigger picture, aren't that big a deal. Is she a good candidate? I have said this multiple times. No. Could the Dems have done better? Absolutely. But this is the process that has brought us to where we are. Did Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the party actively work to undermine Sanders? Probably 100%. Did she pay the price? Not a big enough price. She's still out there, but her people voted her back in, her district. So you can't fight that. Everything is party-based. The president doesn't operate in a vacuum. We're not going to get third-party change via the president. It's too big. It's too much. So when I advocate for third-party, now it's local. When I advocated third-party, this show started January 4th. This email is addressing early on. That was during the primaries. We have a reality now where that's not going to work. It's not going to happen. As much as I'd like it to, none of us are willing to take the risk. We have done what we always do. We are going to pick one side or the other, D or R. And I don't like it any more than anybody else does, but I also said when this whole thing started, sometimes being an adult means making tough decisions. Because if I thought there was a viable third-party candidate and I thought there was a viable chance, it might make more sense. But the thought of taking away my vote, giving it to Johnson, and you could say that the numbers might split evenly. There's enough supporters for Trump and there's enough supporters for Clinton who would jump to Johnson that it would take away from both equally. There's not enough that are actively going to do it. So the only way we're going to see it change is from the ground up. Change is slow. Change takes time. We all want it. We all know it needs to happen. We know that these politicians get entrenched, that they make careers out of it, that they spend the entirety of their lives, and nobody typifies that more than Hillary Clinton. With that said, head to head, stats to stats, personality to personality, if you can't look at that first debate as the perfect example of why Donald Trump shouldn't win, I don't know what you're watching. If you walked away from that and saw him as a leader, as the face of our country, we're just going to agree to disagree. There is no way I would feel, as I described him, he is the guy or the person who goes into a restaurant, eats 80% of their meal, and then says it wasn't good. Always looking for an angle. Always looking to get one over on someone. I appreciate the emailer's sentiment and comments and calling me out. And I will address it always when somebody does that. We have to understand that this is where we are. You have to understand that eventually we have to be more active ourselves. We have allowed it to get to this point. We have allowed partisan politics to get us to this point. We have allowed our own self-interest. We have allowed, essentially, our neighborhood to burn down around our house. And our house is fine. So what are we worried about? Well, that's a problem. You can't just look inward. We all live together in small communities and larger neighborhoods and counties and cities and states and the country. You have to have a broader perspective. So think locally when you head to the polls. Think about who's doing what they're doing for you, or what they've done to you. I would love to see somebody. I wish the Republicans had put somebody quality up there, but they put 17 individuals, none of which were fit to serve. And the Democrats pushed essentially who they had promised the position to all those years ago. And the reality is I don't like it, but that's where we are. And you have to deal with it. It doesn't change my feeling about advocating for third parties. It doesn't change my stance on change. Changing the way we do things, changing the way businesses take advantage of their workers and tax loopholes, changing the way politics happens, how the line in the sand, no agreements can be made. It's my way or the highway, and all they do is sit around and campaign 70% of the time. Changing the way lobbyists and corporate money controls politics. But it doesn't change with the presidency. At this stage in the game, you don't get to the level of president without playing the game that way. We have to change it from the bottom up. Change how they get in the first place. And eventually it will rise with them. Oh, money. It's the root of all evil, isn't it? And the root of many people's problems. John Jameson is a contributor to Investor's Business Daily, CNBC, America Online, and author of Wealth Without Stocks or Mutual Funds. And he's joining us now to talk about the four drains on your money and how to plug them. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ed. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, I want to talk to you specifically because money is probably the main stress in my life, and I imagine in many others. And I am by no means in a bad position. You know, the bills get paid monthly, but I just feel as though I'm swimming in place. I'm treading water. I'm not getting ahead ever, and I'm definitely not planning for the future like I would like to be.
Okay.
So what can I do to make myself richer?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things you already mentioned is, you know, we're so focused on making more money or our investments growing that we're spending so much time on that we never ask ourselves, hey, where is our money really going? And is there a way we can stop these wealth drains that I call them? And there's four big wealth drains. There's more, but there's four big ones. First one's income taxes, and that's in the news all over the place today, right, with Donald Trump's returns getting his personal returns, and he might not have paid income taxes. And so what people need to understand is the same thing that Donald Trump has done legally, many of us can do legally as well and dramatically reduce our income taxes. So I tell people, hey, would you like a pay raise without asking your boss? And if the answer is yes, you need to start understanding how the tax system works. So very fortuitous we're doing this interview today because of what's in the news. So second wealth drain is interest paid to banks, finance companies, et cetera. Third one is market losses. You know, if you got money in a 401k, IRA, and you went through 07 and 08, and you lost 40, 50, 60%, some accounts are back now, maybe you're even up a little bit, but that's 7 or 8 years that you basically took you to break even just because of market losses. So would you have more money if you had never lost any money in the market? And I think the answer for all of us is, of course.
No, I lost.
But at least something almost nobody talks about is depreciation on assets, mainly big assets, like an automobile. And the average American, Ed, will lose more money on cars than they're ever able to put away for retirement. So if we can stop that, just that one wealth drain of depreciation on cars, and show people how to break even or make money on their cars, they're automatically going to have more money to spend and more money to invest and more money eventually to retire on.
Well, let's talk about interest paid. And I think it was around the time that 2007, 2008, when everything went downhill and you mentioned people losing money. My credit card rates used to be much lower, and then that all happened, and I don't know what specifically caused it, but do you remember all the rates jumped up, and they never
went... Oh, yeah, very much so, because everyone thought, they used it as an excuse. Oh, it's riskier out there, we need to make more money, and that's why interest rates went up. It was just an excuse to jack up rates.
Now, those haven't really fallen that much. How can someone find the best rate when it comes to a credit card, which in this day and age is a necessity?
Yeah, it is, but I'm going to teach you something a little bit different that most people don't talk about. Instead of finding a better rate on a credit card, I'd rather see people self-finance when they can. So in other words, you might have $5,000 in a savings account that's getting you 0.25%, but you owe $3,000 on a credit card that they're charging you 13%. You can see the dramatic imbalance here. So what if we took $3,000 out of our savings account that's doing nothing for us, we paid off that credit card, but instead of just keeping it paid off, why don't we structure a payment back to ourselves on the $3,000? So we become our own bank, and we can set our own interest rate. And now, as us as the lender, our money as the lender, we're picking up interest instead of paying out interest. So not only did you stop the interest drain, you actually started an income stream and a wealth stream into your life by being your own bank. And that's one of the things we teach people.
I'll tell you what's scary about that, because I have a situation. You know, we have an emergency fund.
Uh-huh.
We could use some of our emergency fund to pay off a debt we have. But the fear is that unexpected expense coming up and putting us back in the same situation without that emergency fund there. Like, I had a dog that required a very pricey surgery. And should I use that emergency fund to pay myself and something like that occurs, then I'm without emergency fund and I'm back to putting that money on a card.
It's a great point. Two things I'd suggest to you. Number one, don't spend all the emergency fund. Okay, you can use some of it. Secondly, remember, when you pay down a credit card's a revolving line of credit. So, in fact, you do have an emergency fund. You would just have to rebuy all the money, and then you'll start paying interest at a later date. But until that time happens, you're picking up the interest instead of paying the interest. So, number one, don't spend all the money. Keep some of your money in reserves. Number two, you still have that money available to you. It's now it's just in the form of a line of credit, and that line of credit is called a credit card.
What do you think is a good number for an emergency fund? Because I read a report that, what is it, a certain percentage of people have less than $1,000 in savings?
Yeah, very. In fact, I think it was 60%, which is troubling. You know, if you listen to what we've been taught for the last 30 years, you should have 6 months' worth of bills. Well, you know, Ed, how many people are going to be able to save 6 months' worth of bills? I mean, it's great in theory, but in reality, it's not going to work. So a lot of it depends on how you get paid. It depends on if you lose your job, will you get unemployment? Are you self-employed? Do you have money that comes in steady, or you're self-employed and sometimes you make big money and sometimes you make a little bit of money? But I think, you know, the target goal for anybody should be 60 to 90 days worth of your bills as far as that emergency fund goes. And then if you want to build it up from there, great. But I think you can start sleeping at least a little bit at night if you got 60 or 90 days. $1,000 is insufficient.
I mean, as a guy with a kid in daycare, I can only imagine how many jaws dropped with people that have maybe two kids in daycare. If you're talking 6 months, daycare alone is $12,000 for two kids.
Yeah, sure is. That's why you really need to focus on those wealth drains. Get your income tax rate down. Use all the things that are available to you to lower your income taxes. And that's available to everybody. It's not just available to the billionaires. It's available to the people, the working class Joe. They just don't understand how the system works. They think they're going to go to H&R Block or their CPA, and their CPA is going to tell them how to do this. Not the CPA's job. The CPA's job is to take the numbers that you give them, make sure they're right, make sure they're in the right place, and tell you what you owe or how much you're getting back. So if you can start to slow those four wealth drains down, you're automatically going to accrue more money. And Ed, I'm sure you remember the famous saying by Benjamin Franklin, penny saved is a penny earned. Well, that was before the income tax. So now
right.
You need 15, you know, you need 1.5 cents to save the penny. So if you can start saving hundreds and even thousands of dollars every month in that wealth drain, you're going to be in a better position.
Yeah, and when it comes to deductions, there are plenty out there that people could take. I would caution them to do so legally. The big difference between, say, those of us who are not rich and those like a Trump, they also have good legal teams to go along with their tax teams who might stretch the legality of things, and they can clean those things up, whereas you or I will probably get hit with fees and fines.
It could be. I would tell you this. If it's a legitimate deduction and you're entitled to it, take it. And if don't worry, as long as you've got all your eyes dotted and your T's crossed, don't sweat an audit, because very few people get audited, number one. And if it's a legitimate deduction, and also it depends on your income. I mean, they're going to audit guys like Donald Trump, because if he does screw up, there's all kinds of money they might be able to pick up. If you're an average Joe or Susie making $50,000, $80,000 a year, there's only so much they're going to be able to get from you in your screw-ups. So it's also a matter of how much money you bring in.
We're speaking with John Jameson, author of Wealth Without Stocks or Mutual Funds. Let's talk about cars and cars depreciating, because I am of the type up until recently that I'd want a car every 3 years. Didn't necessarily have to be new, but it was a new to me. Where are we losing money when it comes to cars and depreciation?
Well, the biggest spot you're losing, if you're buying new, or even if you're leasing new, it doesn't matter. You're basically making lease payments on the future depreciation. So if you're turning in a car every 2 or 3 years, even with a low lease payment, the lease payment never ends. So you might have a $199 payment, which seems fantastic, but it never ends. And then you turn it in 2 years later, 3 years later, you're always re-eating that depreciation. So number one, if you're going to buy a new car, decide that, all right, look, I'm going to hold this thing for at least 7 or 8 years. That's the only way you can not get killed on a new car, is you got to decide to hold it for 7 or 8 years. Or if you're going to lease it for three, make a deal with yourself that you're going to buy it at the end of that 3 year, hold it on to another 4 or 5 years.
Oh, you make me
really
feel good.
Really, the best thing to do is buy a car that's 2 or 3 years old. You get an extended warranty on it. You get the same warranty as they did new. You know, most of the time at that level, they've only got 30, 40, 50,000 miles on them, and they got a whole bunch of life in them, and yet most of the depreciation's already out of it. You're gonna buy a car that's stickered for $40,000. You might buy it for $18,000 or $20,000 with just a little bit of mileage on it and the same warranty. So you're still going to lose money on it, but you can mitigate that loss by either buying new and holding on to for a long time, or better yet, buy used and hold that for a long time.
Well, that makes me feel better, because I did lease the car that I have now, and I did buy it, and I plan on keeping it until it dies.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one other tip. Here's what to do. Once you have it paid off, if it is paid off, you know, let's say you were making a $250 car payment. What's happening to that $250? It's staying in your checking account, and you're blowing it on other stuff. So make a decision to yourself, hey, it's paid off, that's great, but I'm going to send $250 a month to some kind of a vehicle. I don't mean an auto vehicle. I mean an investment vehicle, and I'm going to get ahead for the next 2 or 3 years. So maybe the next time it's time for a car, maybe you can buy it with your own cash, borrow it from yourself, and make a payment back to yourself. So the first way to do that is once the car's paid off, act like you still have a loan, but that loan's to yourself, and actually save the money. Otherwise, it just gets spent on other stuff.
Do you find when you said the two words, blowing it, do you find that most Americans, when they get rid of a bill, say a car payment, or they get new income, they don't pay themselves and they just go out, they increase their lifestyle, they buy a new TV?
Yeah, without question. In fact, if someone says, hey, I just bought this, let's say I bought a TV and I saved $200, it was on sale. Great, you saved $200. Let me ask you, what'd you do with the $200? And they'll look at you just confused. They don't know what they did with it. They ended up spending it somewhere else. It went somewhere else that they can't tell you where it is. Where I tell people, look, if you actually did save $200, if you had a coupon or there was a great sale, what if you decide that you're going to pay retail for things, you're going to take the discount, and that $200 on your app, on your phone, on your banking app, take that $200 from your checking over to your savings account and just put it out of your natural cash flow, let it stay on the side, and if you make, we're coming into Christmas time and all the Christmas sales that happen, people can put away $15,000, $2,000 at Christmas time just by paying themselves retail and going out there and shopping and taking the discounts, but actually saving the money. Transfer the money that they would have normally spent paying retail over to their savings account, and they still have it. So if they get low and they really need the money, they can tap it out of their savings. But to get it out of that daily cash flow account is critical.
Are there any apps or programs you could recommend for people who aren't as astute and that could help them with things like that?
Well, you know what I do? I'm not really astute when it comes to electronics. I've got a banking app on my phone, and it's got all my accounts on there. So what I just described to you, if I bought, let's say I bought something online and it was $300 and I paid $280 because I got some discount, I'm going to just take an extra second, transfer $20 from my checking account over to my savings account. It takes literally seconds, and the transaction's complete. So use mobile banking apps with your banks.
John Jamison, contributor to Investor's Business Daily, CNBC America Online, and author of Wealth Without Stocks or Mutual Funds. Thank you so much for your time and insight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.